Good morning. I'm Kerry Amos, worship pastor here at First West. We're so happy to have you with us joining in our service today. If you'd like to check out more about what's going on here at First West, please check out our website, firstwest.cc. Again, thank you for being with us.
The religious rulers are not too keen on Jesus. They're trying to do all they can to trap him. They asked him what he thought about the Sabbath. Let's just say Jesus took some liberties on the teachings that have been in place for a long time. But then Jesus went to the synagogue. He met a man there and healed his crippled hand. The Pharisees are furious at what Jesus is doing.
Have you heard the phrase before? Well, that escalated quickly. Been there before? I'll tell you, one of the places I've discovered that things escalate very quickly, the ballpark. It is amazing how we can go from, that's my boy, that's my, no, right? I mean, just that intensity of the ballpark just does something to people. If you've ever had an opportunity to go watch a game at Biedenhorn, you know that that intensity has gone to a whole nother level when you're trying to get out of the parking lot. I mean, it's something about only having several exits and all these cars trying to get out of the area. You laugh because you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you'll find out one day. One day our family was leaving, we were walking out to our car, and all these cars were trying to get out, and it was one of the areas where two of the lanes merged down to one, and all of a sudden, these two vehicles, like you could tell, that it was no longer about just whose turn it was to get in line, it was a pride issue, right? I mean, you could see them kind of start to inch forward, inch forward, inch forward, inch forward, and then all of a sudden, you know, engines start revving, right? And then one of the people, they were looking over at the other car. They were like, I'm going next time. I mean, I could hear the person, I'm going next time. I don't care. I'm going. And the other person, not even looking at them, just inching forward like they're not even there, right? And I know what you're thinking. You're like, typical guys, right? It was ladies, all right? They were so adamant, right? And like, all of a sudden, you're like, man, you just went from watching like your four-year-old play baseball, and now you're ready to fight this person, right? You're all because you just want to get out of the parking lot one vehicle ahead, right? But we have times in our life that things just escalate quickly, right? They maybe feel like they come out of nowhere. Maybe that's in the business world, or maybe at times around the dinner table, right? Or other times where things just, wow, man, I didn't expect it to get to that place that quick. Well, if you've been with us the last couple of weeks, you know that we're in this series called Headlines and Eyewitness Accounts. We're following the story of Jesus through the book of Mark. So you have your Bible, go to Mark chapter 2 is where we're going to be today. And as we're following this journey, last week where we left Jesus was that he was in the house of Levi. Now remember, Levi was a despised tax collector, and Jesus told him to follow me. And then Jesus ends up in the house of Levi in a room full of tax collectors and sinners. It's a really cool moment as Jesus is there in that place. And where we're going to end today is Jesus in the synagogue with a bunch of religious elite, and the Bible tells us that Jesus is angry. Now, how do we go from Jesus in a house full of tax collectors and sinners to Jesus in the synagogue with a religious elite and angry? Well, that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to see this journey of what is it that happens, or what conversation happens, what takes place that moves Jesus from a place of compassion to a moment where we see he's angry. Well, we're going to see that in Mark chapter 2, beginning in verse 23. It says, one Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, and he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate of the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him? And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. So we see this interesting conversation that takes place here between Jesus and the religious elite. The first thing, I think, clue that we see of what moves Jesus to this point of anger in the synagogue is that they were elevating shadows to things of substance. They were elevating shadows to things of substance. Now, hang with me. I'm going to explain that to you. But we see here this moment, it tells us that it was on the Sabbath, and there was this interaction between Jesus and the Pharisees, or the religious elite of the day. Now, Mark has already recorded in chapter 2 two other instances that Jesus has. One is when the paralyzed man, his friends bring him to Jesus, and Jesus is there, and some of the religious leaders are watching, and Jesus says, "Your sins are forgiven." They're like, "Whoa, whoa, wait a second, who are you? You can't forgive sins." And Jesus says, "Well, tell me what's easier, to say to a man, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or to take up your mat and to walk?" And so Jesus then says to the man, "Take up your mat and walk." It's showing that he has authority not over to heal somebody, he has authority to forgive sin. And the Pharisees didn't like that too much. And then in the moment that we saw last week with Jesus and the tax collectors and sinners, right? And the Pharisees were there and they're asking questions. They want to know who is this Jesus? And then it brings us here to Mark chapter 2. In John chapter 5, we see which would have taken place before this. John records an instance where Jesus heals a man that had been paralyzed for 38 years. Jesus heals this man. The man takes up his mat, and he takes up his mat on the Sabbath. Right? That was from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. He takes up his mat, and the religious elite, they see this man take up his mat, and instead of saying, "Man, that's amazing, this guy's been laying for 38 years, is now walking," they say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a second, you took up your mat. It's the Sabbath. You don't take up your mat on the Sabbath." And it says, so they asked this man, "Well, who did this? Who was it that did this to you, caused you to take up your mat?" And the man said, "Well, Jesus did." And it says that they were persecuting Jesus because of this. In fact, in John 5:18, we give good clarity to see how they felt about the Sabbath and what Jesus was starting to do. It says, "This is why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God." So think about the irony of this moment where they're telling this man, "You cannot take up a mat because it's dishonoring to the Sabbath," but yet in their heart, they're longing to kill Jesus. So we see that there's something here about the Pharisees. For them, the Sabbath is very, very important to them. We see in Exodus chapter 16 where that through God, Moses instructs the first Sabbath. He instructs it. Now we're going to see on the very first one, they break it. That tells us something about our hearts and who humans are. As God lays it out the first time, they break it. And then in Exodus 20, as a part of the Ten Commandments, through Moses, God, he's going to lay down the expectations for the Sabbath. And here's what he would say. He would say, "On the Sabbath, you are not to work. You are to rest. On that day, you are to refrain from labor, and you are to rest." We're going to see the continued importance of the Sabbath as we walk through the Old Testament. It wasn't just a law that he laid down back there in Exodus 20 and just left it. But in Jeremiah would come to the people and he would say, "Listen, because you are working, you are not honoring the Sabbath, you are disobeying the law that God has laid down, understand that punishment is going to come." Well, punishment does come. And then we see, if you look into the book of chapter 20, verse 12 and 13. We see Ezekiel. He's there with the elders of Judah, and they've been in captivity for 7 years. And he says to them, he says, "Listen, you know why you're in captivity? You know why you've been here for 7 years? Because you haven't honored the Sabbath." And so what happens is they come back to the promised land. God brings them back to the promised land. And the decision that the religious elite, they make this decision. They say, "Now listen, that was really bad. Our people, we were not honoring the Sabbath, and we got in trouble for that, and we want to honor the Sabbath. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure that we honor the Sabbath." You see, in Exodus 20, when God lays out the Ten Commandments, and he gave them instruction, he said simply, "You're not to work." He didn't give them a lot of details. And so what happens is the religious elite thought, "Okay, we don't want to work, and there's not a lot of details, so let's put the details in place so we know exactly what that means." In fact, they would come up with 39 different things that you weren't allowed to do on the Sabbath, but from those 39s, they would extrapolate that into numerous, numerous different laws, different things that you were not allowed to do. And so the problem that we see here is where God simply says, "Don't work, you are to rest." The people of God had shifted into one ditch where they just simply disobeyed that. But now the religious elite had moved out of that ditch into another ditch, the ditch of, "Well, we're going to come up with all these rules and regulations to tell you what work is and what work is not." And some of them are absolutely ludicrous. They would say that if you were to take 2,000 steps on the Sabbath, that was sin. You could take 1,999, but if you took 2,000, that was sin. Or maybe if you took a ball and you threw a ball up in the air and you were to throw it up with one hand and catch it with the other, you were living in sin. However, you throw that same ball up and catch it with the same hand, you're good. So you can see to where they take this from. Our people weren't honoring the Sabbath, to an instruction that they would give that you could not leave a radish in salt because it would pickle, and therefore that would be work. It's crazy to see the degree to which they took this idea of honoring the Sabbath. Now, I have to tell you, if you've seen the show The Office, I think that there's someone that you could identify with, someone who maybe would relate to the religious elite. Look at his picture. I picture the Pharisees as a lot of Dwight Schrutes walking around in Pharisaical garments. If you've seen the show, you know how Dwight's wired, right? Everything has to be done right. And if it's not done right, he's going to explain why it's not done right, and he's going to make sure that you do it right. That's who he is. That's what makes it so comical, right, to watch the show, of just how passionate he gets when rules are not being followed. But what we see here is not comical. We see people who, where God had given this instruction to rest and obey the Sabbath, that they had taken what God had been given as a blessing and they had turned it into slavery. They had turned it into a burden that people were having to wear. And so it brings us back to this text in verse 23. One Sabbath. So we understand now when we hear that word, we don't just go, okay, the disciples must have been in their best garb because it was the Sabbath. No, there is an understanding in that culture that existed because it was the Sabbath, and what this Pharisaical group, the religious elite, what they were putting on people. So one Sabbath, he's going through the grain fields, and it says here the disciples, they pluck the heads of grain. And one of the other gospels says they take it, they begin to roll it in their hands like this. They're breaking it up for something to eat. And the Pharisees say to him, now, why are you doing what is not lawful? Right? So there is an understanding on the Pharisees' part that what Jesus and the disciples, what they are doing is wrong. It goes against the law. Now, maybe you're thinking, yeah, they're stealing people's food, right? I don't get to just steal someone's food, right? I'm pretty sure if someone walks in my house and goes straight to my fridge and grabs food and walks out, I'm going to say that's wrong, right? If you have a college student, you know their friends do that anyways, right? They just come in and take your food. But in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 25, there is a very clear instruction that was given to God's people. It was saying that as you're moving, as you're traveling, that if you go into someone else's field, you can eat. You can take of their grain and you can eat it. You can see there, if you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not put a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. I mean, you can't go into some dude's field and just start harvesting food and be like, oh, I was hungry, you know. Like, you got enough food for the next 5 months, buddy. But God, and this is just a way of demonstrating God's mercy and his grace, his call for us to love one another, say, hey, if you walk into another person's field, you can take some. It's not a big deal. So when the Pharisees say here, all right, Jesus and disciples, what you're doing is not lawful, the issue that we see here is not that they are taking someone else's grain. It all comes back to the Sabbath. It all comes back to what they have deemed as work. They're saying this is work. You are working on the Sabbath, and that goes against the law. And so Jesus' response, the response that he gives here, was clarifying on several fronts here. The first one is this: when they want to make this big issue of what the Sabbath is and what it means to follow the Sabbath, Jesus is going to remind them again of the role of the Sabbath. The role of the Sabbath. He shares with them this instance that we see in verse 25. He says, have you never read? Now again, have you never read? He's saying this to a religious elite that would have known the Old Testament forward and backwards, right? This is like saying to a mother of three, do you not know how to change a diaper? Okay? It was offensive. Have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate of the bread of presence, which is not lawful for any, but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. Jesus, speaking to this religious elite who would have known this story from 1 Samuel chapter 21, he says, don't you remember that time when David when he went to the house of God, when he went at that time, the tabernacle, and he went in, and in that moment, he was hungry and he was in need, him and those that were with him. And he went to the high priest and he was looking for food. And in 1 Samuel 21, it says that the high priest took the bread of presence. This was known as the holy bread. It was bread that was put out once a week. And so the old bread, when it was taken out, it would be used to provide food for the priest, but no one else, the priest. That was the law that was given. But in this instance, we see something very fascinating, that David and his men, hungry and in need, they go, and the high priest provides this food for these men. Not high priest, but for these men. I think what Jesus is showing us here, what he's saying in this specific instance, is there is a precedence that when there is a need, that they could address the need even though it may affect the ceremonial rule that was given. Now listen, that can be a slippery slope, so we can't run with that, but we just see what Jesus is saying here. That God had commanded these rules for the bread of presence and what was to be done with it, but Jesus here, he's saying, hey, when you look at it in 1 Samuel 21, there's no condemnation that is given to David and these men. There's no condemnation that is given to the high priest. It simply states that this happened. So Jesus is just reminding them about the role of the Sabbath, all right? But he's not just going to remind them of the role of the Sabbath. He's going to remind them that he's the Lord of the Sabbath. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. He says here that the Sabbath, look with me in verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. He says here the Sabbath was given for man, not man for the Sabbath. He's picturing here, we see it in Exodus chapter 16 where God, when it lays out, says that he gave them the Sabbath. It didn't say when he instituted the Sabbath, he required of them the Sabbath. He gave them the Sabbath to rest. And so Jesus reminded of that. And then he says, listen, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. Now, it's hard for us to catch the fullness of what he's saying here. But we know as Mark's beginning, Mark chapter 1, how he began his book, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. He was saying something clearly about God's nature and who Jesus was. And then we saw last week that this Jesus, the Son of God, he is the friend of sinners. He's telling us something about Jesus. And now in this moment, as Mark records the words of Jesus, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. So all these Pharisees are bickering about what you can do and what you can do. And what Jesus says is this, listen, I'm the standard. I'm over all of this. It points to Matthew chapter 5 where Jesus said, listen, I didn't come to abolish the law. I came to fulfill the law. That's who I am. He's saying here that he has the authority. He has the authority to reinterpret Old Testament traditional understandings. Jesus was saying something about himself. Now listen, I've shared with you that we're moving, right, from Jesus in this home full of compassion to Jesus in this moment, still full of compassion, but angered in the moment. What gets them there? They were elevating shadows to substance. Here's why I say that. In the book of Colossians, Paul's writing to Jewish Christians. They were people who came out of the Jewish faith, right, and they're now trying to practice their Christian faith. And there were people who, in the midst of a Jewish culture, who were struggling of seeing these people and how they were worshiping God. And listen to what he says to them. Colossians chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a, there it is, Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So for these Jews who had moved out of a Jewish faith that it was all about following the law to now about faith and following Jesus Christ with a heart devoted to him, Paul's giving them some instruction, saying, hey, listen, don't worry about it when people come and judge you by these things, because these things are simply a shadow. They are something that points to a greater reality. Don't assign the value to the shadow. I'm going to guess no one has ever come up to you and say, listen, has anyone told you your shadow looks great today? Or if they ever say that to you, they want something from you. They're finding any way they can to flatter you. We don't assign value to shadows. And that's what Paul's saying here. Hey, the Sabbath, these festivals, these feasts, all these dietary laws and restrictions, they are all shadows that point to the substance. Several weeks ago, I was visiting with an administrator in our school system here. And we were just having conversation. I mentioned something about one of my kids having to miss school. And she said, man, that's really good. I'm like, what? I mean, both of my parents taught school for a long time. So I understand in some degree how teachers and administrators are wired. And I can promise you, I have never heard a teacher or administrator tell me it's good that your kid missed school. Now, I'm sure there are those that believe it, but no one's ever said that to me. And I said, what do you mean? Why are you applauding me for my kid missing school? And she said, well, you know, awards day, we have awards day, and we hand out those perfect attendance awards, right? Now listen, if your child got a perfect attendance award, congratulations, all right? I'm not trying to take away from that moment, all right? If I upset you, you can email me at markfinn@firstwest.cc, all right? So... So here's what she said. She said, Michael, I had perfect attendance from kindergarten through 12th grade when I went through school. I did. I got the award. She said, but the idea of perfect attendance, it drove me so much that there were days I went to school with pink eye. There were days that I went to school with 103 degree fever. Now, some of you right now, you're thinking, who are her parents, right? Here's the thing, she wouldn't tell her parents. She would disguise her sickness so that she could be at school because she didn't want to lose her perfect attendance record. She said, Michael, it was so bad. And she would say, listen, nobody loved my grandmother more than me. Nobody loved my grandma more than me. But this drive to achieve perfect attendance, it drove me so much that I remember thinking, if my grandmother's going to pass away, I hope it happens in the summer so I don't have to miss school. Now listen, there's one thing about getting an award for perfect attendance and just saying, hey, that's great. There's another thing when that desire perverts something to the degree that you elevate something that really is not intended to be the thing that is elevated above everything else. And what the Pharisees were doing, the thing that drove them, was elevating a shadow to a degree that if anyone didn't line up to the shadow, they were wrong. The problem is they were so worried about what was happening on the Sabbath, they weren't concerned with the one that the Sabbath was pointing to. And the same can be true in my life, and the same can be true in your life. It very much can be the same. Now listen, we got to walk through this a little bit, all right? Because we have to be careful that we don't just say, okay, well, just following the rules and doing all that is bad, so we're just going to throw that out, we're just going to love Jesus, right? We're just going to love Jesus. That's what I want to do with my life. I just want to love Jesus. Yesterday afternoon, I had the opportunity to go to the funeral of Larice Rollins. Larice is on our team, serves in Broaden Horizons, and got married yesterday. And it was a great wedding, man, just such a God-honoring, Christ-centered wedding. It was such a sweet wedding. Andrew Osakwe, who's here today? Andrew, where are you at? Andrew, here. Did I say something wrong? Funeral. It was not a funeral. Andrew, I didn't think your service was that bad yesterday, bro. Pray for me. I love you, Abby. It's not a funeral. So yesterday at this wedding of two lives coming together, join one another. Thank you, Andrew. Some of you just woke up and thought, what just happened? So Andrew's leading him through this ceremony. It's an incredible ceremony. And then it got time for the exchanging of the rings, and they placed their rings on each other's finger. And Andrew said something as he was doing the exchanging of the rings I've never heard before. It was awesome. He said this. First it was to Alicia. He put it on her finger, and he said, now, Alicia, you repeat these things. And the last thing he said was this. I will love you as you are. And Alicia said, I will love you as you are, and not as I want you to be. And she said, it's not as I want you to be. And then he said, I will love you as you are and not as I want you to be. I will love you as you are and not as I want you to be. And I'm telling you, that's kind of funny to hear, but what a great truth to be said, especially on the first day of your lives together as a married couple. I will love you as you are and not as I want you to be. Now listen, when we think about this tension that can exist, when we you know, just say, okay, we know it's not about the law and just following the law, so we're just going to love Jesus. We have to be very careful that we understand in our response to Jesus that we have to say, Jesus, we will love you as you are and not as we just want you to be. We cannot, in response to the law, to a lifestyle that says it's all about just doing things, we can't just respond and say, well, I'm going to live for Jesus, and I'm just going to put Jesus in this box that makes it really convenient or really just fits what I want and what works for me, and so that's the Jesus that I'm going to love. Maybe you've heard of the game before, Two Truths and a Lie. I want to give you three statements today, and we're going to reverse a little bit. I'm going to give you two lies and a truth. Now, maybe you're thinking right now, Michael, what, are you telling us to lie? No. Okay, no. But I want you to see this. When we think about this tension, when we think about elevating shadows into substance and what it means for our lives, I want you to see three statements, and I want us to process through these statements when we think about elevating shadows into substance. Look at these three statements up here. Two lies and a truth. The first one is this. God, you're loving, so I can choose to walk, or I can walk however I choose. Second one. Compelled by your love, I walk in obedience. And thirdly, I walk in obedience to earn your love. Now, I would say that one of those are true, two of those are very false. The first one, you're loving so I can walk however I choose. I think this understanding of who God is and what it means to follow God is becoming more and more prevalent in our culture. There is an idea that, well, God is love and God is forgiving, and so I can define what a lifestyle of following Jesus looks like. It's a postmodern worldview that is brought into Scripture. It says that what right is defined by me. There is no other standard. Our culture today would say, not only do I walk however I choose, our culture would just say, I can be whoever I choose. And we know that clearly the Bible has laid down that there are principles about what it means to be a Christian, to be a human, and to follow after God. The other lie is the last one. I walk in obedience to earn your love. This is the picture of the legalist. It's a picture of the person who understands that God is sitting up there on their throne and he is simply a scout. He's a talent evaluator and he's watching your life to see if you have it together enough that he's finally going to offer you a scholarship. Can I tell you right now, that flies in the face of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel of Jesus Christ is number two. Compelled by the love of Christ, I walk in obedience. I understand that God loves me, that God has demonstrated his love to me by sending Jesus to die on a cross, to pay the punishment for my sin and your sin. And it is in that love that I can come to him, put my faith and my trust in him, be forgiven of that sin, be given a new life, be given a hope, be given a future, that it is that truth, that reality that causes my heart to swell to say, God, who would I be to not follow a God like that? Who would I be to know that someone has loved me so much, they have offered me so much when I didn't deserve it? Who would I be to turn my back on that and say, well, it's just going to be how I want it? The gospel says, compelled, God, by your love. I don't have to earn your approval, God. I have your approval, and because I have your approval, I'm going to walk in obedience. I'm going to follow your word. I'm going to submit my life to your word, to following your word. C.J. Mahaney says this, legalism is seeking to achieve forgiveness from God and acceptance by God through obedience to God. The Pharisees would amen that. The religious elite would say, right on. That's why if we throw a ball up in the air, we make sure and catch it with the same hand. The gospel says that God loves you. And there's nothing that you can do to make him love you anymore, and there's nothing that you could do to make him love you any less. And in that love for you, he has made a way for you. He has redeemed you. He's given the opportunity for a new life, for a hope, and for a future. And in response to that love, I lay my life before him. I open my hands and say, God, all that I am is yours. But they were elevating shadows to things of substance. The second thing is this. Second thing that I think brought his heart to a place of being angry was self-righteousness that leads to self-serving. Look with me in chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. It says, again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, or back on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, come here. And he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. And the Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. Commentators believe that this is the very next Sabbath that Jesus is now in the synagogue with the religious elite all around. And there's this man with a withered hand. Now, the law had said that a man with a withered hand was not allowed to be a priest. We know that the animals that were given for sacrifices were to be unblemished. It makes me think, what did the Pharisees think about this man? Tradition says that this man was a stonemason whose hand had been crushed. So his livelihood was taken from him. As he would have moments there, the reading of the Torah, and moments of worship, of raising his hands, it would be obvious to everyone around that this man, that his hand was withered. And Jesus sees this man, has compassion on him, and he asked the Pharisees this question. He asked them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or kill? And here's the question that he's asking to them. In this moment, is your self-righteousness, is your view of yourself so high that if I were to ask you what has greater value, to do good and to save a life or to simply keep a bunch of rules, which one? Tell me which one has greater value. And it says in that moment they were silent. I think in this moment they had clarity of seeing their ways. They were silent. They didn't know how to answer it. And so, of course, we see what Jesus does. He heals the man. He heals him. See, Jesus, I think, was angry because their self-righteousness, their view of self was so high that it kept them from doing what they knew to be right. It kept them from doing good. Self-righteous people, you know what their concern is? Their concern is that others know how righteous they are. But the truth that you know about your life and my life is that we're broken people. We're broken people that have been redeemed by a God that loves us. Self-righteous people, they desire for other people to know how righteous they are. You know what broken people who have been redeemed by, you know what they desire? They desire the redemption of other broken people. What about you? Are you living your life in such a way, are you driven by a desire of knowing how broken you once were, but that God loved you and he saved you and is now in that of knowing the grace of God and the love of God that's been poured out of your life, that you have a longing to do good, that you have a longing not to just serve self, not just to promote your life, but to give your life to impact other people? Listen to what A.W. Tozer said in regards to the idea of self and self-righteousness and this longing to just follow a bunch of rules so we feel good about ourselves. He said, self is the opaque veil that hides the face of God from us. Self is the opaque veil that hides the very face of God from us. He says there must be a work of God in destruction of self before we are free. We must invite the cross to do its deadly work within us. We must bring our self sins to the cross for judgment. Let me ask you today, have you brought yourself to the cross? Have you brought all that you are, your good, your bad, your ugly, to the cross? See, the Sabbath was intended for rest, right? God had given them the instruction in Exodus 16, laid it out in Exodus chapter 20, right? This was to be a day of no work. It was to be a day of rest, a day of blessing. But it pointed to a greater day of rest. in Hebrews chapter 3 and chapter 4, this is what the writer says. He said, God has given us rest. He's given us an eternal rest. And that eternal rest is in his Son, Jesus Christ. Let me ask you today, are you exhausted? Does life have you exhausted today? I'm not talking about how busy your work week was. I'm not talking about all the chores that you have on your plate. I'm asking you today, does life have you exhausted? Maybe you're here today and you're exhausted because you've been like the Pharisees and just trying to do a lot of good things to earn God's favor. But the problem is you never find rest in that. You're never good enough to rest in that. Maybe you're here today and you're exhausted because you've just thrown all this out the window. Who cares about keeping laws? I'm going to live life my way. And if you're honest with yourself today, you sit in that seat and life has just become exhausting. The hurts, the people, the broken relationships that your lifestyle has caused, all of those things, you're just exhausted. Can I invite you to Jesus today? Can I invite you to the one that offers you a rest unlike anything else you'll ever experience? Can I offer Jesus to you today? The one who said, come to me, you who are weary, you who are heavy laden, you who are trying so hard, you who stand up and boast that I'm not like these other men, these evildoers or tax collectors, those that stand up and boast about how great I am and how much I give to the church. Man, you're just so exhausted. And today Jesus speaks into your heart. He says, come to me. Come to me and find rest. Today's the day for you. Today's the day for you to come to Jesus. Would you come and find rest?
Thanks so much for being with us today. My name is Michael Wood. I'm the lead pastor at First West. We're a church in two locations, in West Monroe, Louisiana, and in Sterlington, Louisiana. It's the heartbeat of our church to see people changed by the gospel and living out their Christ-centered purpose. If there's any way that we can pray for you or serve you, would you please contact us? You can get more information about our church at firstwest.cc. Thank you.